Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, May 7th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, it's great to be here. Gold wasn't so great today, though, Al.
No, it's the gold should go up, the gold should go down.
And she go down 1780 today, 1291 off the low of 1286. You also have silver down 25 at 1940. You have platinum down 20 at 1438, and you also have palladium down 20. Yeah, how's that work? 801, that was down almost 2.5%. And even rhodium took a hit today, down $30, almost 3% at 1120. The USDX, not a lot of action there, but it was up 0.09 at 79.22. Oil made a big move today, up 1.25 at 178. And the paper markets today, after Yellen came out and said, oh, we're going to be there and we're going to do what we need to do, we had the Dow up 117 points today. The NASDAQ didn't do as well, but the Dow was up 117 at 16,518. You have the NASDAQ down 13 at 4067. The S&P was up 10 at 1878, and the 10-year yield is still 2.59%. So, Yellen, she was stating today that the U.S. economy is improving, but noted that the job market remains far from satisfactory and inflation is still below the Fed's target rate. Good Lord, can you imagine what we're going to be paying for when we finally get to the Fed's target rate? Yellen said that she expects low borrowing rates will continue and will be needed for a considerable time. And certainly it signals the Fed has no intention of acting anytime soon to raise its key target for short-term interest rates. And, you know, even though they glob onto that job market thinking that lower percentage rate is good. But anyway, we've been at this short-term rates at a record low, near zero, since December 2008. And again, it just goes to show you that there's certainly not any good signs to the economy. And when you hit rock bottom, Al, you'll come back a little bit, and I think that's just what we did. But certainly not to the tune of where it should be, nor will it ever be for a very long time.
Well, I don't know that we've come to rock bottom on anything yet. I mean, we get...
Well, rock bottom at 2008 at that point in time. I mean, we certainly have a, you know, that was the first phase.
That was the...
The first phase of the rock bottom down.
Mm-hmm. We have multiple rock bottoms. We have more than one rock bottom, folks. And when we break through the next one, we'll have perhaps even one after that. You know, we talk about the borrowing rates. They're going to hold that low into the foreseeable future. I find that hard to believe. And the reason I say, I almost wonder if we're being intentionally deceived, or people in business or the markets or wherever are being intentionally deceived. Because by holding the borrowing rate low, it allows people with good credit to borrow it relatively, you know, at low cost, and invest in the stock market, for example. I won't say that's, you know, predominantly the cost the stock caused the stock market's rise, but it's at least, I'm going to assume it's part of the effect. If you have credit, if you can get, but the flip side of low interest rates are that anyone who has money to lend, has actual currency to lend, they're not going to make much lending it in this country. And what that means is low interest rates will flush domestic sources of borrowing, of funds to be lent and so on. It'll flush them out of this country, and they'll go to third world countries or Europe or wherever, where they can get a higher rate of interest. And that's just natural human behavior. And the point is that when they brag about, oh, we're lowering the interest rate and it's going to stimulate the economy, I don't see how that's going to work. I know most people seem to think that's a viable strategy, but from my perspective, if it flushes money out of the economy, yeah, we have low interest rates, we just don't have any money to borrow, money to be borrowed. Now, how do you build new homes or new shopping centers or borrow to go out and buy more gewgaws down at Walmart or wherever? If you flush your capital out of this country because you have low interest rates, you lose that capital, and how does capitalism sustain itself if the capital has gone to another country, another region, another continent where they actually pay decent rates of interest?
Well, I think we've seen that. We've seen the banks, corporations move funds offshore and invest in areas, and they're making the profit. But the poor little consumer here in the States, and they increased, the Federal Reserve came out today and said that consumers increased their borrowing in March by the largest amount in more than a year. And of course, how are they doing it? They're doing it using their credit cards. They're taking out more auto and student loans. And the consumer borrowing increased $17.5 billion in March, and that was up from a gain of $13 billion in February. And this is the biggest monthly increase since February of 2013. So consumer debt is being pushed to a record $3.14 trillion. And the gains in borrowing are seen as an encouraging sign. I don't think
They're encouraging the way the system operates. The more money
for the system,
borrow,
right.
They're creating debt instruments that in theory can be used as collateral, that can be bundled up into bonds or whatever and sold around the world and used as collateral to justify more loans. I mean, if we all go out there and borrow enough money, we may be able to get this country back on its feet under a debt-based monetary system, which is what we have. But if people are reluctant to borrow and they say, uh-oh, we got a big problem here, and they don't go into any more debt, then the debt-based monetary system begins to fall right through the floor. And that's kind of what's happened since 2008. Mm-hmm. The problem with this is we can sit back and say, hey, we can prime the pump. All of you folks just go out and borrow something. Go see your banker and borrow something. It doesn't matter what or how much, just borrow something. And because they can use it as collateral and lend up to 10 times the face value on whatever notes you sign, in theory, it stimulates the economy, but it stimulates the economy the same way as methamphetamine stimulates some people. It's a lie. It is inherently a lie. You can't treat debt instruments as if they were assets in the sense of something like gold, silver, a tangible farmland, whatever. All of the debt instruments are just intangible promises to pay. And in the debt-based monetary system, we're taught to believe that these debt-based monetary instruments, they are assets. They're not. They're really not. You've got to get something tangible to have a true asset. And when the truth comes out, there is going to be screaming and shouting and wailing and gnashing of teeth. All right? When people say, oh my gosh, my paper, my piece of paper, I had a piece of paper with someone's signature on it, and I was a wealthy man because I had a piece of paper with a signature. And people are foolish enough. That's stocks, that's bonds, that's all these little pieces, these little certificates. And they're not wealth. Not really. They're not assets. They're debt instruments. All they are promises to pay. And day is coming. People are going to find out those promises can't be kept. And when that happens, there's going to be a lot of unhappy, impoverished, and very hungry people.
Speaking of hungry people, you have fast food workers. They're beginning to expand their strikes into more U.S. cities, and they're going global. You know, it is kind of amazing. When I think of fast food workers, I don't think of career jobs. You know, I think of high school, you know, part-time jobs. You know, you there temporary until you go to college and get yourself a real job. And not to say that these are not real jobs, but I don't look at them as career jobs, something that, you know, pays $15 an hour. And it's amazing that this movement is catching so much steam and is headed overseas in 33 countries. Now, can you imagine if the people of this country would be so passionate about politics or passionate about their religion that how different things could possibly be? But so it's certainly is catching on, and they certainly want to raise their wages and have better rights. And this is certainly going global. The median pay for the fast food workers is about $9 an hour, or about $18.5 a year, and that's about $4,500 than what they call the poverty income threshold level of $23,000 for a family of four. And certainly, of course, it is very difficult if you have a family of four and you're working at Burger King to support them. But
unless you steal a whole bunch of hamburgers.
Hamburgers.
I can remember working at a McDonald's years ago when I was a kid.
Yeah, I worked at Burger King.
I wound up being an assistant manager. It's the only job I was ever fired from. I couldn't get into it. I enjoyed working outside. I enjoyed construction work far more than working as an assistant manager at McDonald's. But I can remember their policy. And I can understand this from a corporate perspective, but their policy was that if there were any product left over at the end of the night, you had to throw it in the trash. Couldn't be consumed by the employees. And I can understand that because otherwise, if they didn't have a policy like that, the employees would fix up, you know, a midnight meal for everybody that was there and then say, oh, this is left over, and then they'd eat it. I get that. But still, I can remember there was a girl there. She had a couple of kids, and I'd let her take the food home at night to feed her. She was barely making it. Yeah. I always thought it was a strange policy.
They had McDonald's.
From a corporate perspective, it made sense, but from, you know, just from a humane perspective, it, you know, throw the food in the trash rather than let somebody hungry eat it. Yeah.
And I didn't know they had McDonald's when you were a kid.
Yeah, I absolutely remember the first McDonald's that came to our town. They had 15-cent hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? And I mean, that was early. That would go back into the 50s because Ray Kroc started his deal in Illinois to begin with. And we had one, we had a little McDonald's built in there down in Crystal Lake, Illinois. And there was, go back into the 50s, probably, if I had to guess, 55, 56, something like that. I'm not sure. Everybody thought it was great. Everybody stampeded there. It was wonderful. Then they built a Tasty Freeze right next door, and we all predicted that that would put the McDonald's out of business. Or the McDonald's, maybe the Tasty Freeze was already there, and they thought the McDonald's had put them out of business. But the truth was, the two fast food restaurants, there was a certain symbiotic effect, and they both did better right next to each other than they might have done if they'd been there all by themselves. Part of the reason you see Restaurant Row sometimes in some cities where you see just restaurant after restaurant after restaurant. And you'd think that's a bad deal, but in fact it's not. You know, it attracts people. When you're hungry, go to Restaurant Row.
Competition is good.
Anyway, yeah, it is. Actually, I guess it is. Yes, it is.
The nation's report card shows no improvement in reading, so maybe you're going to have more of these kids working at McDonald's. The nation's report card says America's high school seniors lack critical math and reading skills.
I understand.
For an increasingly competitive global economy.
And that's an abomination.
And they're even changing the SATs. They're even changing the SATs to fit into the new world, the new education.
You know, these kids are going to be, I don't know who is ultimately responsible for American education. We can certainly point a finger at the federal government. They play a big part in this. But it's been just brutalized. It's been ruined and destroyed. And these kids are going to be impaired in a way that they won't easily overcome. I mean, there's a lot of things and fundamental skills that you can learn fairly easily. Not easy for everybody, I get that, but they're accessible when you're a kid. You have to make a real effort to learn those skills by the time you're out of high school for 5 years or 10 years or whatever. If you didn't pick it up, those basics in high school, you're going to be impaired for much of the balance of your life, and it's going to show up in what? You're going to be, all you need to know is enough to fill out a welfare application? Is that the sum of American high school education right now? If we have some high school graduates here who are capable of filling out their own welfare application forms, yay! Everybody's going to pay a price for that. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what's next, Melody?
They need to give us a call and check out our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, we do have some of those Hall of Fame baseball silver dollars still available. We have a few left. Give us a call. They're beautiful coins. And for $275, give us a call, 800-375-4188. And if you have any questions, didn't give out our email or our phone number for questions for a very long time, Alfred. Questions at dgscoins.com, questions at dgscoins.com. Or you can call us if you have a question for us at 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191.
Speaking of which.
Yes.
We have a caller from West Virginia.
We do?
Yep.
Okay. Hey, Jim, what's up?
I'm so glad you mentioned that 596-8191 number, because I love hearing new callers. And if people don't call in, I'm going to torture you with things I have to say. Now, all jokes aside, you hit several, almost, this show is about financial survival. It's not telecalling. It's about financial survival, and this whole education thing gets to me because I know how badly I was lied to because my parents made me read real history. But if we're talking, I mean, people need to job skills, and I'm going to just say this much. The only way to create wealth is to take something of little or no value, increase its value as a result of human endeavor. Mm-hmm. My parents got out of high school in 1930, hit the Depression square in the face. They were always telling me different things, and they said, you're going to learn the German system. Okay, you're going to learn trade, and you're going to learn a profession. And by the time I was out of high school, I knew how to plumb. I knew how to wire houses. I knew how to work wood. I made my first guitar, believe it or not, solid body electric, and wound the pickups. I could make cabinets. We had a wood shop in the basement. I could tear cars apart and put them back together. We have kids now. It just scares the daylights out of me. And my grandparents taught me how to garden, and my grandmother taught me how to cook. She said, I don't want you to be a burden on any woman. She was wonderful. But the bottom line is if you folks, young folks particularly, understand that there is going to be very little need for computer programmers. You're going to need to learn how to grow, build, and fix things. You're going to buy tools. And believe me, cheap Chinese tools, it's going to be a thing of the past when hyperinflation kicks in. Insofar as college education, I'd look at electrical engineering at West Virginia University. It's supposed to be one of the top 10 in the nation for electrical engineering. Bull. I had to fix one of my instructor's stereos because I worked at the stereo store in town, fixed all the high-end stereos. I also engineered a radio station. I also did two-way radio work. But, I mean, I passed the first class phone license. And one of my instructors found out, says, wow, we have graduates who can't seem to pass that. I hit it on the first lick. But education is what it's all about, a real education. And I'm not kidding you, folks.
And what's the most important part? What do you think is the most important part about education? Is it the teachers? Is it the students? Is it the parents? What do you think makes the big difference?
Try all of the above. My parents, baby.
You've been listening to Melody, haven't you? You've been listening to Melody. Every time I ask her a question, she says both. You're doing all of the above. And I'm trying to get somebody.
You just have to rephrase your question.
Rephrase your question.
Uh-huh.
Blame the man asking the question. All right. Yeah. Any case. Well, one of the things I saw when I was a kid is that you play your competition. One of the most important things to my mind about going to school is you have to attend a school that has top-notch students. You can overcome, you can compensate for instructors that may not be top-notch, but if you've got a really good group of kids, they compete against each other. And they tend, and that competition can drive this, the education process, where if it's all structured and they lock it down, the teacher says, we're going to do this today and this tomorrow and this the day after that, and it's all just regimented, I don't know that there is the competition between students. I think it's just a question of, get it all by rote.
They took competition out of the schools.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Everyone is equal.
Yeah.
Don't take score. Don't compare. We're all equal.
And once you take that competition out and you remove any reward for competition, the reward may be just a question of being able to needle the guy next to you a little bit and say, ha, 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 I got 99 on the test and you only got 94. Once you take that competition out, then what? It shifts competition for some sort of a positive benefit. It shifts, the competition becomes who can get by doing the least. There's no longer a reward for doing the most or being the smartest or whatever. There's a reward for doing the least.
I agree.
What kind of an example does that set for kids going out into the real world after they step out of high school?
Well,
this is so wrong. It is so wrong. It is such an incredible, and it's not just a mistake. It's a betrayal. You know, I published a magazine back for 12 years, and I can remember one of the articles we had. We had a copy of a final exam for 8th grade in Nebraska back about 1900. 8th grade, you understand? I will guarantee you that most college graduates today could not pass that 8th grade exam. It had mathematics, it had English, it had history and geography and the rest of that in there. I guarantee you it was tough, and it was 8th grade, and the point is it teaches you, it illustrates how much kids are capable of learning if someone makes a real effort to learn, to teach them. Now, it may be that to achieve that level, somebody's got to smack them with a hickory stick once in a while, keep them disciplined, keep them in line, make them learn. But I guarantee you, if those kids graduate with a real education, they will thank whoever provided it for the rest of their lives. They might be a little bit, I never liked that English teacher, but I guarantee you a few years down the road, you say, that guy was all right. That guy helped me. This is just terrible. We're betraying the children with the education system we have right now.
I know how to reverse it.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's very, very simple. My sister was 6 years older than I. She had a terrible time learning to read because he taught the look-say method. Now, this is a long time ago. So my parents, you're going to learn how to read with blue guppies. I was reading when I was 4, the primer. Yeah. Our schools were built with good textbooks and not, they were people with degrees teaching in most schools. They were people who, stick with the textbooks. Now, this tore me to shreds. My mother's a history geek. And after I got out of college, she said, Jim, I've got some history books down here, which we need to take down to the library. So I carried the boxes, loaded into her 68 Cougar. And so I carried them into the library. And she says, if you don't have any bloom for them on the stacks or anything, let me know and I'll come pick them up. Well, she didn't read the paperwork, which in so many words called it donation, which meant that she lost all control of it. A month or so later, she went to the library and wanted to see if they were in the card catalog. No. Well, what'd you do with them? Oh, we had a sale. We sold them all. And my mother went livid. This is a library's all education. But with the right textbooks, the right materials, you can homeschool. I went to a lady's house to fix a keyboard one time, a very complex keyboard, and she just started homeschooling her girls because of the language in the school and a few things, moral issues. And so I told the little girls, oh, they were just nice, wonderful, nice kids. I said, okay, I have a question for you. Learn practical skills. Do you know how to purify water out of a creek, for instance, if the water system goes down? The little girl says, no. I said, you boil it. And her mother's eyes got big as teacups. She was shocked. They didn't even know to boil water. Now, if you want a real shocker, you ask a high school graduate a few questions of your own making and find it out. Now, you mentioned to change the SATs. When I took the SATs, I had to memorize the formulas for the volume of a cone, for instance. They had the formulas written on the SATs. Now, all you got to do is fill in the blanks in the mathematical formula. If you want financial survival, young people particularly, you develop some skills which can be useful. Find a need, fill it in quantity and quality, and the number one rule for business and life is the golden rule. If you don't treat people like you want to be treated, things will not go well for you in the future, no matter what. So I've had my little rant, but the education is the one thing which we're going to have to get a grip on. I predict that there will be a death of the bricks and mortar schools because they're that bad.
Yeah,
I think we've raised around 20th in math and science. I'll quit ranting, but you guys are always touching on something or another about the total financial. You know, it's financial survival, but you got to learn skills.
Yeah.
And you know what you say about metals is all right, folks. It's the only real money in the world because I've read economics. I'll get off my soapbox. Thanks for letting me borrow it.
Hi, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
You know, and one of the other things is you have to learn how to educate yourself. No matter how much education you get out of high school, assuming you even get a decent education, the key in this world, the world is changing so rapidly that you must be able to educate yourself. Right? You've got to be able to sit. I mean, anybody who's got a computer, they've got new gizmos coming down the line every 60, 90 days. And the only way you can educate yourself is you must have certainly a grasp of reading. You must be able to read. If you can read what other people have written, you can educate yourself. If you can't read, you have a terrible disability. And you won't overcome, no matter how good your education might otherwise have been. If you're not able to graduate as a good reader, you're in for a lot of trouble in this life, because whatever you know right now about almost any business you can name will be at least changed significantly and maybe obsolete within just the next couple of years. And then you got to learn again, and you got to learn again, and you got to learn again. And if you want to stay at a level where you are competitive, mostly you're going to keep on learning. And if you can't do that, you're headed for a difficult and unpleasant future.
And you know, Al, it's very difficult, for the family. It takes so much care from the parents. I look at my cousin's family who live in Ocean City. They have two boys. One's in college. One is getting ready to graduate high school. And, I mean, they spend a lot of time with these boys and their education, pushing the books, doing this, and getting, and they're financially able. They buy them the instruments, the musical instruments. They're always challenging these boys. They're fortunate. And a lot of families, you know, we've been placed in a position where it takes two to work. You know, parents come home, the mothers have to cook, they have to clean, they're exhausted by the time they get home, and they've sort of given their children to the school system to educate them, because they're just worn out. to me, I think it's part of the agenda. It is part of the, you know, it was designed to be this way. When we grew up, our, you know, most of us had a mother at home. She worked part-time. She didn't work full-time, but she did work. And
when I grew up, mother was home full-time.
Yeah. And if your
parents... Why do you suppose that is? What's the difference? The difference is my dad's total tax burden back around 1950, he paid about 15% of his gross income went out as taxes.
The real problem is inflation.
No, it's not just inflation.
A lot
it's not
of it.
Just inflation. It's he paid 15% of his total income went out as local, state, and federal taxes.
True.
Today, young man is probably paying about 60% of his gross, maybe more, in local, state, federal, and hidden taxes. A young man today, my dad got to keep 85%. He paid 15% taxes, got to keep 85 cents on every dollar he earned. It was enough to allow my mother to stay home to raise me and my sister. Today, young man gets to keep 40 cents, maybe less, out of every dollar he earns to allow his wife to do what? The point is, my dad actually, he grossed, or his net was double what a young man's is today. It's the reason why the wife has to work. She hasn't been liberated to have a job. It's the reason she has to work. Government has just raised taxes and taxes and taxes, and they keep cooking, you know, just like cooking frogs. They raise them just a little bit, little bit, little bit, and all of a sudden, there you are. You're impoverished.
Taxes isn't the only. It is also
a turn, but government to try to hope to God that the government will give me some money and maybe I can pay the rent this month.
It isn't just the taxes, although it is a very big part of it, and they continue. I mean, even Clinton said, you know, before this is all over, people are going to be paying, what, 85%?
80 is what he predicted.
Was it 80 that he predicted? I know it was 80, 85. But also look at the rate of inflation, everything, the food costs and everything. So you have a double whammy. It's both that have driven people to work multiple jobs to drive the women. And I agree with you. I don't believe it's the woman's... desire. Most of them probably would prefer to stay home with their children and help them and educate them and cook and clean it. And so it's, we got Dan. Oh, we're just about ready to go to a break, so maybe we can hold him till after the break, Al.
Okay. We will take another break starting in about 30 seconds. Would you like to sing, Melody, or what? What should we do for the 30 seconds?
Well,
we're down to 20 seconds.
We've
got to be short.
Well, Al, you're never lack. You're never.
Here's one from the AFP. Israeli spying on U.S. at an alarming level. Israeli spies on the United States more. It spies on the more than any other ally does. The activities have reached an alarming level, Newsweek reported. And the point behind all of this is that our government, who loves to spy on the American people, doesn't want anybody else competing. Okay, they don't want anyone spying on them. They'll spy on us, but they don't want Israel spying on them. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Got a caller, Dan from Texas. Dan, are you still here? He was holding on, I think, before they took the break. Dan, are you here?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What you got for us?
How you doing, Al? Melody?
Good.
Just
good.
Fine.
You?
Thank you.
I'm just going to answer Al's question he asked Jim. It starts with parents. And it sounds pretty much like Jim had some excellent parents and grandparents that taught his parents. And that's where it starts, at home. And a lot of times when somebody's working, it can't be there for their children. Somebody else is raising them. So I'm not like Hillary. It doesn't take a village. No, it takes a family. It takes their family.
Yes.
Another point, I'm going to make one more point and let y'all talk about that if you want to, and I'm going to get off. Another thing is, I was drafted, and I was a field lineman and during Vietnam, and I was taught then that communications is everything. Yeah. Communications. If you don't have communications, you ain't got nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm a retired fireman. I found out in high rises, a lot of the portable radios didn't work. Well, what do you got? You don't have anything. You have no communications. You can't relate to others what you need or anything else. So there was an upgrade there. But I'm just saying those are the two points. The first thing is the home, the family, and the parents. Because if Jim, and I really respect him and what I've heard, if he didn't have decent parents, if they just threw him a bunch of blocks and never taught him anything, what's he going to know for life? And so it's up to the parents to take responsibility for their children first, and then find out who's training their children, where they're at, you know, what's going on. That's my two comments. I'm going to get off and listen. I appreciate it.
All right, Dan, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate and thank you for listening.
No problem. You have a beautiful voice. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I like your voice too, Dan.
Well, I like Frank's voice.
Yeah.
We never hear him.
But
what do we got here?
Dan does have some good points. It starts at home. And you know what's sad is there's so much influence even on the parents now. What do you think these children will be like in the future when their communications is done through fingers and typing on these cell phones? All the abbreviated words and text that they don't even spell. They don't even know how to spell. Or it's like everything is really, truly stacked against them. And I know parents, you know, they listen to the news. They listen to the school districts. And they think that, oh, by the computers is good for their children. We'll try to get them this and try to get them that. And
they can be.
They can
be, but you've got to have that computer set up where it's not just it's not just there for running games.
Right.
All right. You've actually got to use that computer to read, to write, to learn mathematics. If you're willing to do that, it's like any other tool. You know, you can use a hammer to drive nails or You can use it to crack peanuts or something like that. It's better if you learn how to drive bales with that hammer than if you, you know, just crack peanuts open. There's not an easy solution to any of this. But part of the solution is everyone needs to be aware of the problem. And then everyone needs to realize that we don't have people in positions of power who are able to solve the problem. And then we have to realize it's going to ultimately be up to us to deal with that problem as best we can. A lot of people, you know, a lot of people, Dan was talking about Jim's parents doing an excellent job of educating Jim. True. But not every parent is able to do that. And a lot of people, you know, the reality is they didn't learn a lot, because perhaps they weren't all that intelligent or motivated, one or the other, and they don't really have the capacity to teach. So what are we going to do? And I think the worst thing we can do is send our kids off to these big schools. I think you homeschool if you possibly can. And if you can't homeschool, I think you ought to keep that school as close to your home as possible. And I think you could go down on Skid Row. And you can find people on Skid Row. If you can dry them out, they actually have degrees. They're capable of educating. Now, I believe there's people within a couple of houses of where I live right now who are actually capable of being competent educators for, you know, four, five, half a dozen kids in the neighborhood. Go over to Mrs. Jones' house and learn English every day. And there's Mr. Smith over here, just the other place, and he will teach mathematics. They may not have a license to teach from the state. And people say, oh, you can't have these people teach. I'd say these are the people you want, because these people might actually care about teaching the children. And I think that makes a difference all by itself. I can't imagine that many children are going to most high schools in this country right now, without a sense, they know they're being robbed. I don't know if it's most, but at least a significant number. They know they're being betrayed. They know they're being robbed. They're angry. They're sullen. They know they're being fed a bunch of crapola when they go into class. But somehow it could be an education, and instead they're just putting in time. I think if they had a teacher who really cared, even if that teacher did not graduate from college, I'm sure we can find teachers right here on the block, capable of teaching kids, certainly in grade school. And maybe we'd get a better result. I don't think we could get a worse one. That means it's time for you, Melody, to say yes, no, or maybe.
All of the above.
All of the above.
You know, we were talking about generational education, and if, you know, the parents aren't educated, you know, how can the children? And it goes on and on. But yet I can remember my grandparents, perhaps they didn't have the degrees, but yet they were wise.
Mm-hmm.
And they were life wise. And this is part of life that, too, is not being taught. And even more in today's world, because it is globalized to some degree. And so you're also finding another disconnect from that type of an education that was
reinforced. Well, the kids get, I don't know, the whole thing is so bizarre. We live in a world, you know, it's
Hollywood.
Easy to criticize, but we live in a world, it is an unnatural world.
Mm-hmm.
Things are moving so fast. I don't know. I don't know what to do other than just kind of hang out and say, yay, or we, or something like that. Sometimes it's all you can do. It's like being on a ride at Six Flags or a roller coaster or whatever, and you hang on, you enjoy the ride as best you can, but it's moving in ways that are hard. What do kids do? I don't know. It's easy to be critical, but the truth of the matter is these are just... I don't know if anybody's got an answer. But part of the answer is we have to recognize the problem. I mean, the first order of business, the key factor in being a brain surgeon is diagnosis. You've got to be able to diagnose the problem. Surgery in the final analysis is a skill that, you know, a lot of butchers down at the meat market, they might have a comparable skill. You're just cutting flesh. You're cutting meat. But what flesh? That's the point. How do you know where to cut? This is where the diagnosis comes in. You've got to diagnose the problem. You've got to recognize, look, this isn't working. It can't simply sit back and say, look, I know the solution. Let's spend more money on education. We'll pay the teachers more. We'll give more money to the administrators. And that'll solve the problem. And it hasn't worked to a significant degree in this country at all. More money doesn't equate to a better education. Got to look at it, figure out what the problem is, and move on from there and try to do the best we can to solve the problem. I've got something here on Russia's President Vladimir Putin, and it's simply that Putin blinked yesterday, Wednesday. Wednesday, at least in Russia. Troops are pulled back from the Ukraine border. And what may be a major, this is from the Washington Times, and what may be a major step toward de-escalation in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin said Wednesday he's pulling troops back from the Ukrainian border and also is pushing pro-Russian separatists to scrap an autonomy referendum scheduled for Sunday. It's unclear where the Russian troops will now be stationed, but Mr. Putin said during a Moscow meeting with Swiss President Didier Burkhalter that he wants to enter a new round of talks with the government in Kiev. Pro-Russian separatists who have seized government facilities in eastern Ukraine had planned to hold a vote Sunday on whether the region should be granted more autonomy from the central government in Kiev. However, President Putin said, quote, we believe the most important thing is to create direct, full-fledged dialogue between the Kiev authorities, that would be the people who are running Ukraine right now, and representatives of southeast Ukraine. That would be representatives of the Russian population that are in the southeast Ukraine. Putin wants a dialogue, and he's pulled his troops back. Russian president said, "This because of this, we seek representatives of southeast Ukraine, supporters of federation in the country, postpone the May 11th referendum in order to create the necessary conditions to encourage a dialogue between the two opposing parties." World War I caused 16 million deaths and 20 million casualties. It's commonly believed that World War I was precipitated by the assassination of Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand in 1914. In retrospect, we can look back and wonder how mankind can have been so stupid that the murder of one lousy archduke could precipitate 16 million more deaths. But obviously, mankind is capable of provoking, then reacting again, until a chain of reactions, counter-reactions, and overreactions escalates into millions of deaths. World War I is a classic example of that human propensity to react and overreact until millions of largely innocent people lie dead. But looking at the Ukraine, we see another relatively trivial offense. Crimea rejoined Russia. It was part of Russia up until 1954, thereabouts. They got handed over to Ukraine. Now they're back with Russia. This isn't a terrible crime. This isn't it's a relatively trivial offense that has the potential, nevertheless, to precipitate significant war between Ukraine and Russia, and in the extreme might even cause World War III. We can only hope that someone behaves in a manner that's almost foreign to human nature and breaks the chain of provocation, reaction, and overreaction as it escalates from triviality to tragedy, and it appears that the threat of local war over the Ukraine, perhaps even World War III, has grown to a point where it's beginning to frighten some of the leaders in this confrontation. Prudently, President Putin has backed off. He's pulling some Russian forces back from the border with Ukraine. Now we can watch to see if the Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine, who are still screaming they want to be part of Russia, want to see if they're capable of behaving in a way that's prudent, or if those separatists are crazy enough to risk war, perhaps world war, to join Russia. We'll also be watching to see whichever forces, if any, do what they can to aggravate the Ukraine crisis and cause rather than prevent war and deaths of thousands, maybe millions. What do you think, Melody? Does Putin's attempt to de-escalate the Ukraine crisis explain today's $17 fall in the price of gold? Does this mean, wait, we're backing away from war? Is that why gold went down $17, $18 today?
I don't think it has anything to do with his attempt to de-escalate the crisis. And we wouldn't have
We
wouldn't have had oil up a buck and a quarter either. But we do have Ivan on the phone. We only have about 30 seconds thereabouts to talk to him. Do you...
If he talks fast.
Go ahead,
Ivan. You talk fast?
Yeah. Good afternoon. One quick question regarding the point on Ukraine. I think Putin's main objective was Crimea, and he got that, which was annexed to Russia.
Yeah.
The only thing he's looking for probably is, like I said before, is a land bridge to Crimea. And that might be the line between Donetsk and Odessa. And then the rest of the Ukraine, they won't bother. So they might allow Odessa to be part of Ukraine to allow them to have access to Black Sea, because otherwise they would be landlocked. If they take Odessa...
But we don't have time to do that. We can't take any more time right now, Ivan, because we're out of time. So we want to thank you for
your call. I wanted to point out that that's why he probably, that was his primary objective, was Crimea.
I agree. Okay. I agree. And now he's caught in a situation where the separatists may cause problems. He probably hates the separatists as bad as the Ukrainians do. In any case, we are out of time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Millie Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, good work. But you meet Melody and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.